Okay. So, before we get started, any questions that I might be able to answer for you guys? Yes. They kind of suggested workflow?
Yeah,
I have that slide review of that coming up in just a second. So hang on to that question and we'll get an answer. Yes?
For the next few classes, can we just bring our fiveboard and our USB table, or do we need the whole kit?
You'll need the whole kit even more so moving forward.
Okay, so do we need the whole kit today?
We'll do, depending on how fast you guys move, we might need it later. Yeah. Okay. If you don't have it with you, just look over someone's shoulder, though. Yeah. Other questions? Okay, so let's get rolling. We'll do, I think each one of these lectures, what we'll do is kind of try to loop back a little bit from the previous lecture, catch the core topics, do a little bit of a review, and then push forward a little bit further. So if we're talking about the files on the Pi board, you see the listing of them here. Let's talk about the first one, boot.py. What's its purpose? Runs at start, so that file runs. It's the first thing to run every time that Pi board gets powered up. Okay. And what do you mean by jump start it? Okay. Right, so if you have any kind of special configuration or setup, that's a good place to put it. Stuff that needs to run before kind of your main algorithm begins. Setup of pins, maybe, or external sensors, those kind of things. All that said, however, it will be rare and maybe might not happen at all. Depends on how far we get later on in the session, in the kind of progression here, for you really ever to have to touch that boot file in terms of this class. Right, you're doing more advanced things. You take your kit with you to senior design and want to do some fancier things for your senior design project. It can kind of come up there. But for most, if not all of this class, we'll have to see how far we're able to get. You won't have to touch it. Okay. So boot's there, runs at startup, allows you to do configuration things. Right. How about main.py? What does it do? It's the main part of your code, the algorithm. When does it run? Right, it runs immediately after boot finishes. Okay, so whatever is in boot runs. And then immediately, main.py runs. The board, the Pi board, has to have both of these. Named exactly this, extension and everything, for it to run. Right. So in your process, if you've called your main file, you're working on something different on your local computer and try to drop it without renaming it, it's not going to run unless it's called main.py. Okay. That can be changed, but for our purposes, that's what main has to be called main. Okay. And that file, of course, can reference other files. So all those import things we're doing, basically we can import code from other files and that main one and run as part of your main algorithm. Okay. And we'll see that kind of moving forward. Those imports. Right. So we're pretty much going to be importing PYB more or less all the time. Right. And if you want to use something from an imported library or imported file, you have to prepend, remember, the name of that library you imported. So we imported PYB. So PYB dot means I want this LED function from the PYB library or file that I imported. Okay. Same thing with time. We'll use time a bit more today. Right. I import that time library. That's one you'll probably be importing in almost all your projects moving forward. If I import this time library, what I'm saying here is I want the sleep function from the time library. What this allows you to do for more complex things, if you kind of go down this path, is you can have functions that have the same name from different libraries. That's one reason we do it this way, to avoid name collision, it's called. Right. So there's actually, you could have a sleep as part of some other library that you wrote that would be different than time.sleep. You could have mylibrary.sleep or whatever. Okay, so allows you to have kind of things get more complex, names that make sense start to become rare. So it allows you to work on that. But whatever the library, however you imported it, period, and then the name of the function. Okay. Capitalization is important for Python. Spacing is important. Yes, sir. All the core ones for the MicroPython, yes. There are third-party ones. We'll be adding some soon. And you can look at the MicroPython site. We'll have a few that you can get that aren't included. You can get by for the purpose of this class. Yeah, most everything you need is going to be included. There's a math library. There's floating point math library, time, all kinds of different things. Yeah. Okay. Once we have that REPL open, should be REPL special command review. Feel free to take points off. What does command D do in the REPL?
Soft reboot.
So you'll get, if it reads it and actually does it, you'll get an information, hey, I'm doing a soft reboot. All right. What does control C do in the REPL? Control C will cancel, I heard somebody say it, cancel a script if it's running. So if your script's there and got stuck in some kind of while loop, it's running and trying to do stuff, and you're not getting a REPL, right? You're not going to get to that prompt if your board's trying to actually run something else. Right? It's in the process of running some other command you gave it. Right? So you can hit control C, and it will kill main.py if main.py is still running and break you back out to a REPL that you can type into. Okay, so if you connect to the board and don't get any kind of prompt, this is one of the first things to try to kill the main.py that was currently running when you connected. Okay, and then you should get a prompt after that. What does control E do? That's paste mode. So control E will enter this paste mode. Your prompt will change from the three greater than to three equals and let you know that you're in paste mode. Paste normally. And then how do you get out of paste mode?
Control D.
Control D. So if you're in paste mode, control D will exit paste mode and then immediately run whatever you pasted in. Okay. I'm going to include in this one, basically, where to find help. I think the documentation for the PyBoard and MicroPython is pretty well done. Have these bookmarks if you don't already. There's also a lot of links at the bottom of the class page and a bunch of sample code there. Okay. So again, have the documentation open. If you don't know the sleep function for the PyBoard, Google it. Right? You're going to get to the PyBoard help. Or go to the PyBoard help page and search there for sleep. It's going to return to you. Right? So it's not that you have to remember everything, but you should remember how to get to everything. Right? That's what we want to do. Okay, so the question earlier was, what about the recommended workflow? Right? I think some of us didn't quite get this last time, so I think good time to review. So if you connect to your board, I'll connect to the board and start up the REPL in CoolTerm. Okay. Once you're connected to the board, you're also going to have access to that board as a flash drive. Right? It's going to be PY flash. When you're going to will show up just like a normal USB stick you plugged in. Okay. What you want to do is work on scripts locally, right? And almost always it'll be main.py in here, inside some kind of local folder on your computer. Call it main.py. I can show you as a reminder, here's what my folder looks like. Inside each one of these folders, so the folder name says what the code there is going to do, but inside each one of those I have a main and a boot. And maybe some other stuff depending on what the file is. Okay. So these are all on my computer, not on my PyBoard right now. Okay. So I wanted to open this up in Atom, which I have. There. Right, so here's a main that's open in Atom on my local computer. We'll actually talk through this one a bit more, right? So I edit locally, save it locally, working in Atom on the local file, named main.py. Right, the py is not only needed for the PyBoard, but it also will tell Atom that, hey, this is a Python file, And then you'll get the nice syntax highlighting and stuff like that. The colors will let you know what stuff means and things. Okay? So once I have a script that I'm ready to test, I want to run on the board. Drag that main.py onto the py flash that looks like a USB drive or whatever. Okay? So take the file you're working on in Atom, drag it onto the py flash. It'll ask you probably, do you want to replace the main.py that's here? Yes, we do. Okay. Then from within the REPL, I want to do a soft reboot. When I soft reboot, it's going to run boot.py again and then run main, but now your new main is there to run. Okay. That clarify for you? Yes? Okay. So questions about that process? That's kind of a, you're going to do that probably hundreds of times over the next few weeks. Yes? So control D, you have to be in CoolTerm for that to work. Yeah, so it'll copy the main. Let me plug in and we can walk through it maybe. So I think, you know, there needs to be some delay so that it has time to actually copy over there. But once it's actually done copying, you can just bounce the CoolTerm. Okay, so let me see. I can do this. Okay, so here's, let me open CoolTerm. Oops. Okay, so we're connected, right? We have a prompt here in MicroPython. Let's say I want to run this code that I have in that onboard Excel folder, right? Here's the PYB flash folder for me. I can just take this main file, drag it over. Yes, I want to replace it. Just the main file. Just the main file over. Then I can bounce over to the CoolTerm. And control D. And now it's running that code. This is actually looking at the onboard accelerometer. So you can see the values changing as I move the thing around. If I wanted some other file there, let's go back to a simple one maybe. Main over, do I want to replace? Yes. It'll take a second to... So there I had to break the one that was running already, right? And then I ran the one that's there. So control D, ran the numbers. Okay. So drag over, give it a second to copy. Once it's done copying, in your terminal, control D. Other questions about that process? Again, that's kind of a core one for us. We're going to be doing that a bunch. No other questions about that? Okay. Okay. So you probably saw that I was printing out a bunch of 1 to 27s in that last one I drug over. So our in-class exercise last time was to print the odd numbers between 1 and 27. How many of you figured that out either in class or went home and figured it out? Hands up high. If you did it, be proud. Okay. Okay. How many of you that didn't figure it out actually went home and tried it? Just a few. Okay. You got to work on it, okay? I'm not asking you for homework. I'm trusting you guys to work on this and get it, okay? Time in class is not going to be enough. All right. So, let's look at a few ways we could have done that. All right. We recommended and hinted that we could use a for loop. Well, here's one way. Okay. So this method, basically, I can create a range of numbers, just 0 to 13 in this case. And I say, well, if I have 0 to 13, how can I manipulate that list of numbers to make it be the odd numbers between 1 and 27? Well, I know I could do this. Multiply by 2 and add 1. I'm going to get an odd number always. And I can print out that list of odd numbers. Right? Print out an odd number. Okay. So let's walk through this one at a time. Okay. I have a range of 14. That's going to give me 0 to 13, right? It's in that kind of thing to be filled out. So the first time through this loop, what is counter equal to? 0. Okay. So counter 0, I get down to odd number. So what's odd number? If counter was 0. It's 1. Okay. So I print 1. Okay. Back to the top. Okay. Do I have any numbers left in range? Yes. What's the next one? 1. Okay. I get down to odd number. So odd number is 2 times 1 plus 1. I get 3. I print out odd number. I print 3. Back up here. I still have left in counter. So it keeps looping that way. Until I'm out, until range, I've used all the numbers I have in that range. You guys following that one? Yes? You had the same formula, but every time it printed out 27. You had the same formula in a for loop like this?
Yes, it was 4 counter and range 14.
Okay. And then what's after that?
Odd equals 2 star counter plus 1.
Okay.
And print odds.
My guess would be that print odds is over here rather than in the for loop. Okay. So his mistake, it sounds like, was his print was over here, not indented in the for loop. What happens then? It's only going to print the last one, whoever said that, right? So it ran the loop. The print wasn't inside to get printed every time. It ran the loop. The last number stored in odd number was 27. So when it came back over here and the for loop was finished, it just printed the last one. Okay. Another way you could do it. The range function is actually a little bit more powerful than we've seen so far. You can actually specify a start and a stop and the number of things to increment by. Right? So help range on MicroPython site would have got you to that. Right? So I start at 1 and I increment by 2. So I go 1, 3, 5, 7, 9. Print odds, pretty easy. This is probably the most concise way to do it. Right. So works just as well, not a whole lot more code one way or the other. Okay? I could also do it like this if I wanted. Use a while loop. No problem with that. So I start out with counter is 1. And then I have a while loop that says while counter is less than or equal to 27, print out the counter, and then add 2 to it. Okay? So it's 1 up here. Gets to the while loop, is 1 less than or equal to 27? Yes?
Yes.
Okay, good. Print 1. Then counter equals 1 plus 2. Counter plus 1 plus 2. So I get 3 here. Back to the top of the while loop, is 3 less than or equal to 27? Yes, that's true. So I print 3. Counter equals 3 plus 2. I get 5. Is 5 less than 27? And it keeps going through that until I get to this being false. Yes? Yes.
For the rest of the code?
Everything after that, yeah.
So,
yep. For the most part, we're running.
If you wrote something after this while, would the counter now be equal to the last value?
The last value. So that's what happened in his for loop. He was updating the odd number variable each time through the loop. So what happened here is he had Give me 1 second. So you must have had something like this, right? So the print's not inside the while loop or the for loop, right? So this just runs. It's saving stuff into odd number, but we don't print it out until the for loop is finished. So the last thing, it will only print it out the last number. This is why he was only getting 27. Okay. So that was method 4. Okay. Point you to, I added a few ways to do this. So in class exercise there. So there's a bunch, I think 7 different ways. Yeah. 7 different ways that I did. There's way more than that to solve that in class exercise 1 from Tuesday. And they're all there, linked from the site, inside that GitHub folder. So you can take a look at what you did, copy and code, try to run it, see how it's different, that kind of thing. Okay. So our second in-class exercise. How many of you guys got this one? I know I saw one group had it at least. Hands high. Let me see. Be proud. Okay. Good. Good job. So if you got the first one, this is not a whole lot beyond that. Right, this is effectively just adding an if statement in there. Right, so basically, here's the method from we showed from the first example today. Only kind of 2 things you have to add is some kind of control of the LED, which we talked through in class as well. And then once I'm calculating those odd numbers, I do a check on whether the odd number is equal to 13 or not. Okay, if it's equal to 13, then I print some stuff out and turn the LED on. Else, I print the number, just the number itself, and turn the LED off. Repeated calls to an off will just keep the thing off all the time. Right? In this kind of framework, it's not so bad to do that. You don't want to be doing that really, really rapidly, but for this, it's fine. Okay. Repeated calls to on will just keep it on. Okay, so basically the same, all we really added was control of the LED and then an if statement. You guys following that one? Yes. You guys going to wake up today or no? That's a no, it sounds like. Okay. So what can I do to help you guys learn this stuff beyond what we're doing right now? Let me ask these questions first. So what can I do to help you guys learn this stuff? So I'm trying real hard and I'm not getting the...
So
one suggestion, write more code live, effectively, is what you're telling me, okay? How else can I help you? What's that? More exercises for you to do. So you want homework assignments. Okay, so... I'll play devil advocate for that then. I had a couple exercises from your last lecture and nobody went home and did them. But I know, I'm not saying nobody did them, but as a first approximation, nobody went home and worked on them. Right? So how can I help? Help me help you. I want to help you guys learn this stuff. I think it's a valuable skill. It makes you more valuable to your future employers. How can I help? I think so. Yeah. Okay. Okay. So if you think of something that would help you, writing live code, I can try to do more of that if people think that would help. Right? There are exercises sprinkled through today, right, for doing things. Right? So if you think of something that would help you, let me know. We'll try to take care of it. Right? But as I kind of stressed in class, or I'm trying to stress you guys, this stuff's all knowable by you. It just takes a little bit of effort. Okay? And if we're not making the effort, then we're not going to learn it. And it's going to seem mysterious and like magic. I promise it's not. It's more logical than anything you've ever worked on. Right. So spend a little bit of time with it. I think you'll get it. All right. So, okay, we also basically just add that same if loop, if kind of piece of the code to any of the examples from example one. You guys had a, you had a question? Yeah, sorry. Can you hold on a second? Can you guys let me talk? Yeah. So the question was, in this spacing over, so does this have to be a tab? It does not have to be a tab, but whatever you do here, you'd have to do here too. And whatever you did here, you have to do the same thing there. So that's actually another one that programmers fight about. You probably, if you guys watch Silicon Valley, you probably saw there was an episode about that. Whether you use tabs or spaces and how many spaces and all that kind of stuff, is programmers fight about that and have flame wars and whatever. Those do not need to be the same. So I think it's good practice. If you're going to use tabs, always use tabs. If you're going to use four spaces here, use four spaces there. It's good practice to be consistent there. And that is one place where pasting, look, if you're trying to paste some big, huge block of code into REPL, that's where you're going to get errors, is it will see differences in that and say, well, your indentation's not right. So the paste in the REPL, like this would probably be okay, but if you're trying to paste your whole main script into the REPL, it's probably not going to work so well. Yes?
Could you have other words in the place of counter?
Yeah, that's just a variable name. Okay. So I could name it index. I could name it number. I could put an X there if I wanted.
So
yeah, so we did that a little bit here, okay. Right? So we had a counter, was counting the kind of objects in the range, and then we had odd number, we're operating on counter and saving it in a different variable. Right. So these are just variable names there. Yeah. Just like red LED, that's a variable name. I could call that whatever I wanted. If I want it to be just red, if I want it to be X, whatever, that's fine too, up top. Yes?
Why do you use two equal signs?
The two equal signs does comparison. One equal sign does assignment. It says whatever's on this side, save it into this variable. The two equal sign says, is 13 equal to odd number? Other questions? Okay. These kind of structures, what you're going to write in here probably doesn't get a whole lot more complex than this. You're just piecing together multiple of these effectively, right? So maybe instead of counter here, it's if some variable that's storing a sensor reading is 13. Do some stuff as a result, right? The kind of core algorithmic understanding. If you're going to understand how a for loop works and then do some if stuff inside a for loop, you're a long way to being able to write the code for your final robot, right? And you're pretty close to what we have to do for the autonomous boat and my research stuff, right? The algorithmic stuff gets more complex, but the understanding of the building blocks you have to piece it together is for loops, if loops, while loops, effectively. So if you can understand the core principle about how those things work, you're well on your way. Okay, so let's try to push forward a little bit more. Remember that you have a lot of inputs and outputs. That's one of the big advantages over this board over the Arduino. We're going to talk about a few of these today. That's a reminder of what we have on board, because we're going to mess with that stuff first. So we've looked at the red LED so far, LED 1. You have a green one, yellow one, and a blue one that are 1 through 4. Right, so just a little bit of review. You have a reset button. Want to avoid that while the thing's plugged in, because you're yelled at for ejecting your flash drive without saving files to it. You can corrupt the memory. If you're pushing on the reset while it's still plugged in and you haven't ejected it, it's going to be one way for you to corrupt the memory that's on board. Okay. But you do have a button there, the user button, that is meant for you to push on and do stuff with. Yeah. You have accelerometer. So the script I showed earlier was actually reading data from the accelerometer. We can get tilt and acceleration in three axes. And your processor is this STM32. You have those micro SD and a micro USB that you plugged into. Okay. Onboard LEDs, they follow the same pattern as the red LED we've seen so far. So you have 2, 3, 4. You can save those. I will almost always do it exactly like this. Right. So instead of having to type all this stuff and figure out which color that actually is, I know if I want the green LED on, I can do green LED dot on. Okay. Which, you know, basically for those onboard ones, I have methods on, off, and toggle. I could turn any of those LEDs on at any time, turn any of those LEDs off at any time, or I could toggle their state from off to on or on to off. The blue and yellow ones, I can actually I can control their intensity, how bright they are as well. Okay, so basically I put a number, this intensity function, I put a number inside it that tells it how bright to be, from 0 to 255. Okay. I mentioned that onboard button. I looked at this briefly last time. In the MicroPython language, they actually call it a switch. Right? We can basically read the value of that switch at various times manually, kind of query it. Hey, what's your value? We also can have, and we'll have see when we get to probably working with your kit that we're going to give you, you can set up code to automatically do stuff anytime it's pressed, no matter what else is going on. Okay, so the core setup code for that button looks like this. All right, it's actually called a switch, and it's part of the PYB library. So we do a PYB.switch. And I'm storing it in this variable called button. Okay? So code would look something like this. And then anytime I want to see, hey, what's the value of that switch? Is the switch pushed or not? Is it pressed down or not? I just call button with parentheses. Okay? If it's pressed, this thing would give me a true back. If it's not pressed, I get a false. Okay? So how could I check if the button is pressed? Yeah, returns are true or false. Yeah, so you call this function. It's going to return to a true or false. How could I tell if the button is pressed? Yeah, I'm going to use an if statement. I think that's a good way to get at how what kind of syntax you might need when you're writing code. I want to do this if the button is pressed. Well, okay, that's kind of hinting that I need an if statement. I want this motor to run while the sensor value is less than 27. Well, that's kind of a good hint that you should have a while loop there. Right, so if you can explain what algorithm you want in plain English, quite often it's going to give you the formulation, what kind of core structures you're going to need in your code. So yeah, to read the button, right? I set up the button. This while true. How long does this while loop run? Yeah, it's going to run forever, right? Because this while loop will run as long as whatever's in here is true. Well, that's true forever, right? So this while loop just keeps running forever and ever and ever. Okay. And what's happening in there, is I check the button, right? If the button's pressed, what does this return? Somebody say it. I get a true back. So I have if true. Well, okay, that means I should run what's inside the if statement, which prints out button pressed. Okay. If it's not pressed, that's a false, so it doesn't do anything inside. And then we just sleep 100 milliseconds between checking the button. So I sleep 100 milliseconds, go back up here. While loop is still true. Checks the button again. Goes through the same process. Okay, so let me see if I have that one. We can do that. I don't have that simple one here with me. Nope. Okay. Yeah, I don't have that code on my, just that code itself. Sorry. Okay. So we are to our first example for today. Okay. I think this, I'll put this back up once I flash the example, but I think this is your template to use for that example. Okay. The PDF of these slides, so you can get to the LED stuff, is already posted, by the way. First in-class exercise is when the button is pressed, turn on the green LED, and all the other ones should be off. Your onboard button, the user button on your Pi board. Okay. When the button is not pressed, you want the red LED to be on and everything else to be off. Okay. So give that a try, and we'll come back together and compare notes. Anybody got this one yet? Nope. Anybody close? Okay, so at the suggestion of my friend up front here, let's talk through how I would handle this one. Okay, so I'm going to take and I'll just paste in the code I had on the slide before. Let me see if I can make this a little bigger. Okay, I know I don't need those twice, so I can get rid of that. So I've defined a variable called red LED and one called green LED, which I think is 2, right? And we want the green one to come on when it's pressed, okay? So if I look at this loop, right, I have all my things defined, red LED, green LED, the button. This while true, again, means that while loop is always running, right? Inside that while loop, we're checking, hey, is the button pressed or not? So I can take where I was printing out before, the button's pressed. I'm going to still print that out, and I want the green one on and the red one off if the button's pressed. Right? If the button is not pressed, I'm going to print that out to the REPL to let me know that, hey, the button's not pressed. And turn the red LED on. Green one off and red one on. Okay. And then once I'm finished with the else, I'm going to wait 100 milliseconds, 1/10 of a second, until I read the button again. So let's walk through this again. So up front, up top, I've just defined two variables holding the red and green LED, right? So I can know which one is which pretty easily in the code later. This while true, so anything indented underneath while true is just going to run forever because true is always true. So that conditional, that while loop is always true, it keeps running forever and ever. Okay. Once I get inside the while true, the button and then parentheses just says, hey, what's the status of the button? It's effectively what that function is doing. It will return a true if that button is pressed. Okay? So if the button is pressed, that's going to be true. We bounce in and do what's underneath the if statement. So we're going to print out that it's pressed, turn the green LED on, and turn the red LED off. Okay, so it was pressed. It's going to come down here and sleep 100 milliseconds, go back up top. That's still true. And we'll check the button again. This time, let's say the button's not pressed. Right? So button now would be false. This isn't true. So it comes down, okay, else, the button's not pressed. Turn the green LED off and turn the red one on. Okay, so let's walk through how to drop that on my board now. So I have the main. Oops. I have the main we were just editing, right? I can take that guy, drag it over the PYB flash. Say, yeah, I want to replace it. Okay. Then I can bounce the cool term. Control D. Whoop. Line 45. I can have an error. Okay. Okay. So every tenth of a second now it's printing, the button's not pressed. And my red LED should be on. If I press the user button, which one is it? User button, the button is pressed, and you see my LED turn green. And every tenth of a second it's pressing button pressed. Let off the button, should keep going. Turns red, my buffer's full over there. Okay, if I wanted to kill this program, what do I need to do? Control C. That's what happened there. Okay, and we can clear data, and we're good to go. I can't hear you. Okay. Exactly what's the problem? Okay. So the MicroPython is actually pretty good about telling you what the error was. So let me induce an error here intentionally. Okay. So now I have some code there. I'm going to run it. And it says, well, hey, in line 45, you have an indentation error. Okay? So then I can look over to my code. Line 45, oh, yeah, my else is one too many spaces over. And I knew I had an indentation error there. Right? I can fix that, save it, and that would be fixed. And now I can run it again. Or just break it with control C. Okay. Okay. So if you didn't get that one, go look at my code later. Run it yourself, please. Okay. So if you didn't get that one, put it on hold. Heads up here for a minute. We're going to talk about using that breadboard that you have. Hopefully you guys have seen breadboards in circuits, I assume. But we'll review them a little bit. The one in your boards, your bought in, that came in your kits, what's called a half-size breadboard. Looks something like this on the screen. On your board, each of the two outer columns, they're labeled plus and minus on each side, are connected as columns. Okay? So if you plug in something down here on this kind of red side, and you plug in something all the way up here on the red side, it's just like those two things are connected. Okay. If I plug in something on this side, say blue, negative side, and something up here, those two things are connected. They're in the same column, let's say. Okay. These are not connected. So this column, each one of these columns is connected as a column, but not across the board. Okay. They label plus and minus because that's kind of the convention of where you might send power if you need to get power over to your breadboard. Okay, so usually this would be your plus DC voltage and then minus would be your ground. Okay. In the interior of the breadboard, you have kind of two sides. You have A to E and F to J. Each one of these is connected in a row. So 26, row 26, let's say, these five holes are connected. Okay. On this side, row 26, these five are connected. Okay. There is a break in the middle of each row. So A through E on any row are not connected to F through J. Okay, so we're talking row 26, A through E are connected, F through J are connected. They're not connected to one another, unless you run a wire across. But internally, they're not connected. Okay. So the breadboard, again, you have columns on the outside that are most commonly used for power. And then you have rows on the inside. That usually that's where you put your circuit, whatever wiring you actually need. Okay, you guys got that? Okay. Remember that there is a break in the middle.
So if you connect E to F, it would make the whole thing?
If I connect E to F, yeah. If I put a wire right here, then this whole row would be connected. Yep. Or if I did A to there, then this whole row is connected to that whole column now. So let's look at some hardware setup. You have a button on board. You can have buttons off board too. So you should have in your kit a few push buttons. It looks something maybe like that picture over there. See if you can dig it out. Didn't bring mine. Mind if I hold up your button real quick? Should have. Your buttons look like this. A little baggy. Yep. Once you find your button, you notice it has kind of 4 feet. What you want to do is plug in 2 of those feet on one side of the middle part of your breadboard and 2 on the other. It doesn't have to be that exact location, but it does need to straddle that break in the middle. So I've taken the breadboard so it'll fit and just turned it sideways from what we just saw. Okay, so again, one foot, the other, straddling the middle part. You might have to kind of wiggle it to get into the breadboard, actually.
You can change the location, correct?
Yeah, it doesn't have to be those exact rows. Yeah, doesn't matter.
So based on this, there's not going to be any soldering this semester.
No, I'll be soldering probably, but you guys don't need to, yeah.
Is it supposed to like snap?
It should kind of snap into place, yeah. It doesn't snap, but you should feel it kind of press into place. Yeah. Again, you might probably gonna have to wiggle it some to get it to fall into place, the way those legs are on the switches. Was that? Yeah, nice. Go.
Take it out or
just pull it. Yep.
So what is in there? Is in there?
No, you can pull it out. Okay, once you get the button in place, you want to take some of those wires you have that are in your kit that are pointy on each side. You want the male to male. So in your kit, you probably have some wires that are male on one side, female on the other. You have some that are male to male. Double male wire. And what you're going to do is take from pin X1, X2, X3, X4, run it over, and plug it into the same row as one side of your switch. Okay? You're going to take the other one. I would plug in this side first. Plug into the other row, the other side of the switch, and plug in to 3V3 on top of your pie board. What I would do Good practice when you're wiring. I probably should have told you this 1 minute ago. Eject your Pi board, unplug it while you're plugging wires into it. It's good practice. It's going to be a little bit hard to mess one of these up, but just be safe. Remember that this whole row is connected, so you don't have to plug into this one. As long as you're in that row, you're fine. As long as this one's in that row, it's fine. Okay, it seems like most of you guys are connected. If we want to read that button now, this is how we're going to do it. Okay? So we're going to import Pi board. We're going to import time again. We have to tell the Pi board, hey, what's plugged into X4? We want that to be an input. Okay? So this whole line, we're using basically Pi board. We're saying pin X4 is an input. Okay? So we have to define that from the very beginning, effectively. And say what we're working on, what's coming into X4 is an input. Okay? Now if I want to read the status of that input, whatever variable I called it, here I called it input pin, or whatever variable, so input pin dot value will tell me whether that input is high or low, 1 or 0, true or false, all equivalently. Okay? So in this case, what's going on? We have a while true thing again. So that part's looping forever. Right? So whatever's indented here is just looping forever and ever. Okay? We have that pin defined. The first thing we do inside the while loop is say, well, what's the value of that input? Is the button pressed or not, effectively? Okay? Then based on the value that we got back, if it was true, then we know the button was pressed. If it's not true, then it has to be false. It's only two states it could be. We have an else and know that the button was low. It wasn't pressed. Okay? And then we do the thing. We're going to sleep 100 milliseconds before we check it again. Okay. So if you have everything plugged in, you can try typing this in or copy it from GitHub. It's on there, I believe. It's called digital input on GitHub. Save it as a main.py, drag it to your board, control D, soft reboot, and then you can push on your button and should get some information about what's happening. Okay, we're going to show you one more thing today. Okay, we'll skip that one. Let's just talk through this one. How about that? So if I wanted to take that code that you just saw, and instead of printing stuff out, or in addition to printing stuff out, turn on one of the onboard LEDs, what do I have to change? Yeah, so we look back at the code we wrote. Right, so we had, it's going to look something like this, effectively, right? Yeah. Where instead of the button thing, it's going to be the input state. Right, so let's write it real quick. Okay, so I took the code right out of the slide we had, pasted it there. So if the button is pressed, right, we know already from the code we just had that this is what's going to get run. So if I want the LED to turn on there, what do I need to add? Okay, if the button's not pressed, what do I want the LED to do? There you go. That's it. Okay? And we still can print that information out. That way, if the LED's not coming on, but we're getting stuff printed, maybe the LED's wired wrong or something's going on with the LED itself. Right? Pretty simple change. Okay? Okay. You also have a buzzer in your kit. Okay? So dig out your buzzer. It's a bit smaller than this one in the picture. If I show yours. It's a little round black cylinder. Looks like this. Okay, so what you want to do with that buzzer is plug it into one part of your breadboard. Take one side of it to ground. It's labeled GND on your board for ground. Take the other side and run it into Y2. If you have your button wired up, you could leave it wired up. It's not going to hurt anything. Your buzzer does not have red and black feeds. Just put the feed in and you'll be fine. Okay, so it looks like a good number of you have this set up. Okay, the code for this one's a little bit long to show on the board. So what I'm going to suggest to you, if you go to the class site, there is buzzer. Controlling a piezo buzzer. Okay, you go there, you'll get here, you want to go to main. Okay, and then what you can do is copy and paste everything inside. Or probably go copy and paste all this and save it as main.py on your computer. So you can copy this main onto a file on your computer called main. Okay? See, it's kind of longish. Okay? So copy everything there. Create a file in Atom called main.py. Paste what's here into there. Okay, I'll show you where that link is again. So you want to go controlling a piezo buzzer. Okay, if you click there, you'll get to the full repository, and then you want to go to main, and then you can pick everything inside the actual file. Scroll all the way down to the bottom, make sure you get all of it. You can paste that into a new file in Atom. And it should look something like this. Let's see. And here, somebody got it running, it sounds like. So it's running through a bunch of notes. So, play a little tune for you. All right. So, I asked you guys to buy this buzzer. It's fun to make music. How could the buzzer be useful in a more practical sense for your project? Yeah, so you can indicate, right? You're not when your robot's actually running, you're probably not going to be plugged into it with the REPL. So to debug what's happening, you're going to need to use other cues. Right, so you have four LEDs on your board. So depending on if you have errors or something, you can light those LEDs. Or you might be able to use your buzzer and beep it in some certain pattern to let you know that you're at a certain place in your code, or you have a certain sensor reading that's not appropriate. So you can use the buzzer and the lights to give you and your team feedback on the current state of your robot as it's working when you're not plugged in with a REPL. Okay? So that way, if something goes wrong, you don't have to guess anymore what happened. Right, you'll know exactly where the error happened. So lots of buzzers going off. That's good.
Could you program, like, if I say a recording, could I program it to say that and stop an error?
So the question was, if you record a program, what you'd have to do is translate that into individual notes, which is going to be non-trivial to do, actually. So a simple song, like tones like Mario, would be pretty easy to do. Voice synthesis is going to be much harder. So the question here, like, could you program it to speak some error? Speech is going to be really hard to do with this kind of buzzer and the processing power you have. But like a certain beeping pattern would be totally easy to do. Like three beeps really quick means that there's an error in the motor or something. Okay, so questions about what we talked about today? Okay. So please, it's in your best interest. The final project's going to be way easier if you go home and poke at this thing a little bit. Right? Spend some time with it. All right? That's how you're going to learn it, get better at it. If you have questions, we'll be around for a little while longer. Otherwise, see you on Tuesday. Yeah.
Are you going to put up any more examples?